Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I absolutely love Babbel because their courses help me learn real-life conversational skills. It's so easy to learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to the locals without having to consult language apps. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time offer for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/SPP. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/SPP. That's spelled BABBEL.com/SPP. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Smart People Podcast, a podcast for smart people, where we talk to smart people, but not necessarily done by smart people. Hello and welcome to Smart People Podcast, conversations that satisfy your curious mind. Chris Temp here. Thanks for tuning in. Have you noticed that there's so much information about health and wellness, science, vaccines, cures, that it feels like we might be on the cusp of, well, fixing it all? Specifically, one thing that caught my eye recently is the use of mRNA vaccines to cure things like cancer. I'm sure you've heard of mRNA vaccines. It's what the COVID vaccine was primarily. It got a lot of attention in the media. And so I wanted to talk to somebody who could help us understand this new landscape of aging or not aging. And that brings us to this week's guest, Venki Ramakrishnan. Venki shared the 2009 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for uncovering the structure of the ribosome. He's a member of the National Academy of Sciences. He runs his own lab at the MRC Laboratory of Molecular Biology in Cambridge. And he's author of the brand new book, Why We Die, The New Science of Aging and the Quest for Immortality. In this episode, we start off talking a little bit about mRNA, DNA, what it is, how it works. We then move into a brief discussion about the COVID vaccine, the conspiracy theories. Can mRNA actually change who we are? And more around that. And then we spend the second half of the episode talking about aging, anti-aging products that there are today, and more. Hope you enjoy it. If you do, the best thing you can do is make sure you follow/subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. Tell a friend about it and enjoy the show. Let's get into it. We are talking with Venki Ramakrishnan about his brand new book, Why We Die, The New Science of Aging and the Quest for Immortality. Enjoy. Venki, I know you won a Nobel Prize in this space. So I want to talk to you about the COVID vaccine first, talk about the conspiracy theories and understand that. And then we'll get into aging and your recommendations on how to stave off death. So let's start with this. What is mRNA?
Every gene is made from mRNA. Every protein is made from mRNA. Our cells are constantly copying the genes on our DNA into mRNA.
You know, when you learn that you've got the double helix, don't they split
recreate? The strands of the double helix come apart, and each one of the strands is copied into mRNA. DNA contains one strand of DNA will contain thousands of genes. So The proteins we make are made from genes, and as the cell needs those proteins, it sends signals which say, hey, I want to copy this section of the DNA because I need this protein. And that section's copied into mRNA. The mRNA then goes, you know, from the nucleus of the cell to the cytoplasm, and there ribosomes latch on and make it.
It's bringing the mail to the ribosome.
Exactly.
Hey, make this.
Now you've got it.
Got
it's the messenger.
Got it.
And that's what the M is for.
So the vaccine, we made a synthetic mRNA.
We made a synthetic mRNA that contained the code for a protein that we ourselves would never make, which is
got
the spike
it.
Protein.
Got it.
Okay?
Okay.
And so the way it differs from a traditional vaccine is, in a traditional vaccine, you would inject a virus, like a killed virus that's like with polio, or you would make, like with hepatitis B vaccine, or, you know, many vaccines that we give our kids, you would make the protein, a particular protein, outside the body, and then you would inject the protein into the person. That would be the vaccine, okay? And you would react to the vaccine. Here, we're getting our own bodies to make the protein instead of making it outside. So there were actually, for coronavirus, there were actually, the traditional vaccine was also there. Novavax, you know, made the spike protein outside the body in the traditional way, and then, you know, injected that, you know, and that's the Novavax COVID vaccine. It worked. It worked fine, you know.
Why do an mRNA one?
Well, because the mRNA, if you have a variant, right, it's very easy to change the mRNA to reflect the new variant.
As opposed to make a new spike
protein.
Otherwise,
you'd have to make, you know, you'd have to change the message, then you'd have to make new protein, and then you'd have to inject the new protein. So you're saving a couple of steps, you know, so it's very efficient. And also, there is a feeling that it mounted a stronger response because it was made in our body and it folded correctly and everything. And so it produced a somewhat better response. One thing I have to say is, you know, there are people who say, oh, this is all new technology, and so I don't trust it, and so on. But the reality is, you know, when mRNA was discovered? In the sort of late 50s, early 60s, you know? So that's when we, you know, sort of early 60s, people had an idea of what mRNA was, what it was doing, et cetera. So, you know, it looked like the vaccine was developed in 11 months. That's really not true. It's based on knowledge we gained over the last 50 years, and we just happened to be ready for it, you know?
That's, I mean, talk about good timing. And so I think, and you would probably know this, because I never looked into the conspiracy theories much, because I just didn't believe in them necessarily. But I believe one was something about, by injecting this mRNA, we are changing our DNA, or we are modifying ourselves or something.
It's nonsense.
Crazy.
Complete nonsense.
Okay.
Because
and explain why that couldn't happen.
Because mRNA doesn't get inserted into our genes. So it's like a one-way, it's like a one-way cop, you know, street. So your genes exist on DNA, and then parts of the DNA are copied into mRNA as you need them. But the mRNA just gets used up, you know, in the cytoplasm, and it actually gets degraded by the cell very quickly. So, you know, it's not like mRNA is going to get inserted into your genome, okay? I mean, that's just not true.
So, Venky, I'm going to try and use an analogy. Tell me if this sounds about right. So I like this idea of thinking of the mRNA as the postal carrier, right? He walks into the post office.
It's carrying a letter with the instructions on how to make a protein.
So is it a fair kind of analogy to think that what mRNA vaccine does is, imagine I have to give somebody instructions to do something, but I have to do it in Chinese.
Yeah.
And I don't know Chinese. So I don't know it, and I can't know it. But what we did is we gave the messenger the letter already written in Chinese.
Yep.
So all it's doing is giving it to somebody in the language they need. And then once the message is there, it's gone.
Exactly. Think of it this way. Let's say DNA has a bunch of books, okay? Think of it as a large collection of books. And each book has instructions on how to do something. You know, let's say DIY collection. You know, one might tell you how to repair your sink, you know, or how to fix your door, or, you know, whatever, okay? Now, supposing that you have to deal with some gadget you've never seen before, and you don't have that collection in your library, okay? So somebody then sends you...
Gives you the book.
But in the language you can understand... how you can deal with things, like fix your iPhone. You know, you might not have that in your collection, right? Because maybe iPhones weren't invented when you had your library, okay?
That's a much better analogy. And second of all, I just read an article about how mRNA is like the future of curing cancer. Incredible stuff. What I'm wondering is it fair to say that, like, when we get very skilled in this, any ailment, if we know what we want the body to do, we can just give it the instructions now.
Absolutely. And you can think of it as a general way to get cells in our body to make any protein we want them to make. Okay? So it has to be a protein, because that's what mRNA codes for. It codes for a protein. Okay? So if you want to make a particular antibody, or you want to make a protein that'll target a cancer cell, or here's an interesting thing. I mean, this is something, you know, I've just started a company based on mRNA. And we have people who are born with genetic diseases. Okay? So they're making a version of the protein that doesn't work because they've got a mutation in their DNA. Okay, so the protein they make doesn't work. So you could give them an mRNA that has the corrected version of that protein, okay, the corrected code for the protein. And so when that mRNA goes into their cell, they'll start making the right version of the protein that works. And so then they won't have that genetic defect. They won't suffer the consequences of the genetic defect.
Okay, so question on
but
that.
But they're not modifying their genes, okay? So you have to give them the mRNA on a regular basis.
That's what I was going to ask. Because if it's in their DNA, it will, once that mRNA messenger gives the message, it's gone and their body will revert back to the DNA instructions.
So you would have to give them, see how long the mRNA lasts, and how long its effects last, and then you'd have to have a dosing schedule. Like maybe you'd have to give it once a week or once a month, you know, something like that. You know,
have we done this yet?
It's completely new, but it's the next level of mRNA therapy. So in the vaccine, you don't care how long it lasts because it makes a burst of the protein. And your immune system recognizes it.
Because your immune system remembers, though. So it remembers
the instructions. And reacts to it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, you need a booster once in a while to keep strengthening the immune system. But you don't have to have this constant level, which you would have for genetic diseases. And there are, you know, many children who are suffering from, you know, really terrible genetic diseases.
Absolutely.
So this is another way of doing it.
Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian-approved to be nutritious and delicious. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head over to factormeals.com/smart50 and use the code SMART50 to get 50% off. That's code SMART50, SMART50, at factormeals.com/smart50 to get 50% off.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, you have a company that's doing this, and so this
is, well, we're trying. Or, you know, we're just
trying.
We're you know, one employee.
Sure, yeah, but I mean, like, this question's going to sound ridiculous, but why can't we then just? Why can't we do it? We know what the issue is. Take any.
Yeah, well, there are things. You know, it has to get into the right kind of cell. It has to be in the right. Right amounts, how much mRNA you'll need to make enough of the defective protein. You have to know how long it lasts. You have to make sure that repeated dosing doesn't cause side effects. There are all kinds of, you know, safety issues, efficiency issues, you know, how well it works, you know. So it's complicated, you know, and that's why, medical science takes a long time to go from an idea to actually something that works, you know.
Well, and that makes sense, except the pace at which we did COVID. Now, I know that we have been looking at this type of virus for, I don't know, a decade, right?
You've got bird flu and all that. You know, the reason we knew that the spike protein was a good target was because of SARS, which hit 20 years earlier. And we knew that this is very closely related to SARS, so it would attach the same way. That's why we knew the spike protein was a target. So, and of course, the mRNA technology was, you know, had almost come up to speed. And like I said, with vaccines, that's one of the easiest case scenarios where you don't care. You just need a burst of the protein enough to, like, trigger the immune system into responding. And it's you know, whereas therapy for genetic diseases is much, much harder.
That makes sense. What about cancer?
Yeah, so that's where you make a protein that'll target specifically cancer cells and induce other cells to kill them or possibly, you know, create a vaccine against cancer cells. Again, you're trying to make different kinds of protein that would attack cancer. And that's another promising area for this kind of therapy.
Because seemingly, again, in my layman brain, like, that shouldn't be that hard, right? Cancer is an abnormal cell that replicates
but
too
much.
It's
our much, own so cell. It's our own cells. You know?
So we can't make something that attacks our own cell, because obviously that'd be horrible.
Yeah. So you'd have to, so that discrimination and targeting, that's what makes treating cancer so hard.
Obviously, we'll get into your book, and it was hard because in doing research, I've seen so many things you've done and so much really cool information. But, you know, going back to the ribosome, how did that then lead into, or did it? How did that research tie into this book, Why We Die? I mean, talking about aging and immortality.
That a lot of aging has to do with our own proteins malfunctioning. So, for example, as we get older, many of the proteins we make, you know, stop working or they clump up. And that's what happens in dementia. You know, proteins start clumping up. The body has lots of mechanisms to maintain the quality of our proteins. You know, so there are checks to make sure the ribosomes are working correctly, that they're making the right protein. That there are no weird errors in the process. So we have a lot of quality control mechanisms. And if we have defective proteins, we have ways of getting rid of those proteins. And we have ways of shutting down. So if you have a problem, let's say you're making lots of bad protein, you know, proteins which are unfolded, they're not folded correctly, and they're starting to clump up together. So then, you know, the body says, hey, wait a minute. I've got a problem. I better stop making protein. So that's a signal to the ribosome saying, You know, don't start making any new protein. So there are lots of aspects of aging that are related to, you know, because the ribosome is so fundamental, it almost impinges every area of biology, including aging.
Right.
But I don't work on aging, but that has an advantage, okay? And the reason is that aging has now become tremendously hyped, okay? Every day you'll see some magic cure for aging, you know, there'll be some book, you know, touting the virtues of this, that, or the other to, you know, either avoid aging or, you know, postpone it or something. So it's become a tremendously hyped field. And I felt I was in a prime position that I'm a molecular biologist who understands, you know, a lot of this stuff, but I don't have a direct, I don't have skin in the game. I'm not, I don't have a vested interest. I don't have an anti-aging company. I'm not pushing some, you know, concoction. You know what I'm saying? I could take a hard look at the biology of aging, which is multifaceted. It's a bit like cancer. You know, cancer we think of as a single thing, but it's actually multiple things that have to happen before you get cancer. That's the same with aging. You know, aging has multiple causes. These causes are not independent. They all interact with each other. And, you know, so I could take a hard look at the biology of aging, try to explain these things in layman's terms, a layperson's terms, and then, you know, give some sort of, you know, my opinion on where is it all going. What are the pitfalls? You know, what are the things which are complete snake oil and things like that? So, you know, so I've tried to give a person a general idea. Why do we age? You know, things don't age at the same time. You know, butterflies live for days or weeks. And then, you know, you have sharks or whales that live for 200 or 300 years or even longer, tortoises that live for 200 years. So, and we're somewhere, you know, we're actually doing very well for our size, you know, so we live, you know, it turns out large animals.
Because we're
large
big.
Large animals actually live, generally speaking, longer than small animals. You know, they for their body, they have slower metabolism and, you know, than like a mouse or a bat. And although bats live also unusually long for their size, you know, they live like 10 times longer than mice. Even though they're about the same size. So there are all these variation in lifespan. And the question is, you know, is our lifespan sort of fixed or is it extendable? You know, so I think there are all these questions. So I took a hard look at it and tried to give the reader, first of all, a realistic idea of where we are now, but also the tools. The important thing is to understand the basis for aging and its different manifestations, so that next time they read a report or listen to a podcast or anything, you know, they can evaluate how credible is this, you know, is this real or is this just sort of, you know, hype and nonsense, you know? So I think, you know, it's to both for their to help satisfy their curiosity. We all worry about dying, we all wonder about why we have to die. And so it satisfies that curiosity, but it also gives them the tools to evaluate what's going on around them, you know, for the future.
Yeah, I love that. And it kind of reminds me of the conversation we just had, which is a lot of the misconceptions around vaccination just simply come from a lack of education. And that's not even the person's fault. It's just that's how it goes. So the less educated, the more likely we are to be duped. And this could be an aging when I go buy $100 cream to get rid of a wrinkle when that literally can't help. You know,
most of those creams don't do anything, you know.
So, I could imagine.
Because the wrinkling is coming from inside due to defective proteins that get, you know, defective as we age. And so, you know, the fibers don't align as correctly as they did when we were young. And so that causes our skin to age. So if we have to do something about that, you have to change the process from inside. You can't just put a cream on top, you know. Then like putting paint on a rusting car and expecting that the rust isn't going to be there. You know, of course, it's still going to rust, you know, so.
Well, let's start there because a lot of people think of it. Is there anything we can then do from the inside if we're looking at skin and wrinkles and sagging?
It's not something immediate, but there are signs. For example, people studied, one of the big areas that people studied is called caloric restriction, you know.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
People found that if you put animals on very low-calorie diets, they tend to live longer and they live and they're healthy. Okay, and this is like adjusting it so that they're not malnourished. So just above the level where they're malnourished. Okay, and now of course people say that you're comparing them to mice that can eat all they want. You know. So this would be like comparing somebody who eats moderately, exercises, with somebody who spends all their days at an all-you-can-eat buffet, okay? And of course, it's not a fair comparison, you know? So there are people who would argue that, but there's good evidence that, you know, restricting the number of calories you eat does do something. So then people ask, well, what does this actually do? And they've discovered pathways that are related to what happens when you restrict your calories. And, you know, I discuss two of the major pathways. You know, one's called the TOR pathway and the other's called the IGF-1 pathway. So there are a couple of pathways and they change the sort of program of the cell. You know, both of them affect protein synthesis, the rate at which we make new proteins, which are, of course, related to my guy, the ribosome. So people then ask, well, could we give drugs that have the same effect as caloric restriction or some of the effects of caloric restriction, but help? And so, you know, there are people who advocate something called rapamycin. Now, you know, rapamycin is one of the more promising molecules. And I don't mean rapamycin, but it could be molecules which are similar to rapamycin. Now, the problem with rapamycin is it's an immune suppressant. You know, it's used for, preventing rejection of grafts and so on, you know. And so
And
there's evidence that, you know, you become more prone to infection if you have if you take rapamycin. It could have other serious consequences. So it's not clear, you know. And then other people say, oh, yeah, but that's at high dose. At low dose, you could have the positive effect without any of the negative effect. So this is a kind of ongoing debate, you know. But it is, I would say, rapamycin, the approach is not snake oil. It's based on real science. But its safety and efficacy, and especially in humans, still has to be demonstrated, you know. And there's a general problem with testing things for humans for aging. Because, you know, if you have a disease, it's much easier to do clinical trials. Because you can take people with the disease and you give, you know, half of them the old treatment or no treatment. And you give the other half the next treatment and see if there's a difference, okay? And it's a random. The patients don't know it. Even the nurses who administer it don't know it. And so you're not like, you know, influencing them psychologically. It's because the placebo effect's very strong, you know. And that's why a lot of people who take these concoctions, even for anti-aging, they say, oh, I took this and I feel great. I feel better. It's, you know, that's because of the placebo effect, you know, because they, you know, want it to work and their mind, you know, somehow, you know, helps them think it's working. But because if you wanted to cure a disease, you could do those sorts of clinical trials. You know, like with the vaccine, they tested, they had a certain number of people get the vaccine, others didn't, and they found the rate of infection and rate of deaths especially went down in the vaccine group. So that's one way. But with aging, what are you going to do? Are you going to wait 20 years to see if this group lived longer than the other?
Right,
very, very
exactly.
Hard. Okay, and so then they have to develop proxies for aging. You know, like markers with change in your body as you age, and they can measure these markers and see if the markers are slowed down if you do the treatment and so on. It's still in its infancy, you know. So I'm not questioning that we should do aging research, but I'm questioning the hype, which is it's not around the corner. You know, these are hard problems. They're going to take a while, you know, before we even know what's promising and what isn't.
In your perspective, in writing the book, what were the things that excited
some of the things
you?
I was particularly interested in. Well, I came to this book. I came to writing this book with the idea that, you know, there's no way to break our lifespan. Our lifespan's fixed, and you know, these people are all. But actually, I'm not so convinced anymore. I think, you know, there are species that don't show any signs of aging, or they age so slowly that we don't really see it. Like hydra, I talk about hydra. I talk about, you know, jellyfish. They're constantly regenerating their cells. You know, this would be like, you know, if you had some machine and you keep replacing every component, you know. And of course, you know, with humans, that's going to be very, very hard to do. And especially with the brain, it's going to be very hard to do. But it is a thought. What if we could reprogram cells, you know, so that we can slow this down or even reverse some of it? And one fascinating thing is, you know, we're talking about, can we reset the aging clock? You know, all of us would love to do that. In fact, humans have been resetting the aging clock every generation. Because think about this. A child born to a 20-year-old woman is not younger than a child born to a 40-year-old woman. Even though the 40-year-old woman's eggs are 20 years older, okay? All right? So, you know, and the parents, you know, so you see what I'm saying? So the aging clock is reset every generation, okay? And
wait, explain that. Wait, that it's reset to, every
you
generation.
Know, child is born
what do you mean
at
by that?
Age zero, you know, has his age zero. It's not. So the child born to a 40-year-old woman is not born 20 years older than a child born to a 20-year-old woman. You know, when they both are born, they're both at the same age.
So the eggs don't age. But so basically the eggs don't age biologically.
Well, they do.
I mean, they do.
I talk about that in the book. There's a lot of selection going on. And that's why it's much harder for older women to conceive, because they have fewer really viable eggs. There's a huge amount of selection. There's selection going on all the time. The selection for the eggs from the germ cells, you know, which result in the eggs. And then there's also selection for the sperm, you know, because if they're unhealthy, they won't swim fast and they won't make it, you know, to fertilize the egg. And you know, and there are all sorts of other selections. And then even the early embryo is selected all the time, you know, so you might have a fertilized egg, but you might never even realize it because it might be defective and you just don't know it. You know, it's not even a miscarriage. In miscarriage, you realize it.
Yeah.
Of course, people do have miscarriages and become more frequent as you get older. So there's lots of selection going on. But the result of all the selection is that you have a child which is essentially reset to zero. And then, you know, so I think, but of course, it's reset for other reasons. The DNA, all the little tags on the DNA that you accumulate as you, with time, in the egg, they're all reset so that the development of the egg starts from zero again to produce a new human being, you know, or a new animal. So I think that's fascinating, you know, the fact. And so biologists are wondering, well, you know, this happens naturally. Well, can we reset our tissues? Let's say, you know, our tissues all, they don't age at the same rate in people. You know, in different people, different tissues might age at different rates and so on. And let's say one tissue is getting older and it's not functioning well. Is it possible to regenerate that tissue? You know, and that's one big area of research is people are trying to figure out if they can reset the clock in some of these tissues by reprogramming these cells. So there are some very interesting biology. None of it is there yet. It's not like there's going to be some magic cure for aging around the corner. Much as, you know, the tech billionaires who invested in these companies, they, you know, they're all getting older. They're all middle-aged men, you know, sometimes married to younger women. And they all, you know, there's one thing they can't buy, which is something to stop that clock from ticking. So they're investing heavily in aging research, you know. But it's not going to be around the corner, but there's going to be a lot of very good biology that comes out of it that eventually might help us. And the way they might help us initially will be against some of the, you know, disabilities of old age, the debilitating illnesses and frailty. You know, we all have aches and pains and things don't work. You know, we get various diseases. So those things are really worth tackling, you know, because we're going to have an aging population. It's very important that our aging population stays healthy, you know, for as long as possible. So I think a lot of the research hopefully will address those areas first. Then, you know, whether we can live beyond, I mean, the current record for a human is 122 years, you know. Jean Calment, who used to, I think for the first 100 years of her life, I believe she was a heavy smoker, and she used to eat a kilo of chocolate. That's like 2.5 pounds of chocolate a week. And so
what? So what did you determine with something like that? How much of it can we impact and how much of it are we born?
So I didn't know, but I talked to Tom Perls, who runs the New England Study of Centenarians. So he's a doctor who looks at centenarians, people 100 years and older. What he says is that because of advances in our health and medical practice, like heart disease, cancer, etc., people are living longer. So more people are living to be 100 years old. Okay, so the number of centenarians is growing quite a lot, you know. But the number of people living over 110 is not growing at all, okay? And he feels that beyond 110 or so, it's largely a matter of genetics. You know, if you have a good combination of genes, you know, you're likely to live long. So then that leads to a question, well, what are these genes, you know, and what do they do? So people are looking to study the genomes of these centenarians to see what's special about them. It might be different for different, you know, centenarians, but there might be some things that they all have in common. So it's going to be hard to tease out exactly why people are living longer, and it could be for different reasons. But that's another area of interest. And it's possible that if, you know, we make sufficient advances, you might be able to push that frontier back. Theoretically, there's no reason why you can't do it, but practically, you know, it's not, you know, theoretically, there's no reason why we can't colonize, you know, some other galaxy, okay?
Mars.
But practically, it's not possible, you know? And so it's a bit like that, you know? So I think, you know, and I hate to predict the future because, you know, people are always incorrect. They either underestimate or overestimate how quickly things are going to happen. You know, so
outside of the obvious, which is exercise, eat healthy, what was your favorite thing to uncover about, maybe it's not helping us live longer, but it's helping us live better, more healthily, etc.
Exercise, okay. So I talk about all the things that go wrong with aging, like, you know, these organelles in our cells called mitochondria. They're actually remnants of bacteria that we swallowed up like 2 billion years ago. And we kind of live in a symbiotic relationship with these organelles, you know. So you think of mitochondria as kind of remnants of bacteria. They have their own little piece of DNA and they multiply and so on. But they age very quickly, you know. Now, that's one cause of aging. DNA damage, another cause of aging. Another cause of aging is this protein quality control, which is related to, you know, controlling how quickly we make proteins and the rate at which we make them and so on, and which proteins we make. So It turns out all of these, so some of these are related to caloric restriction. Well, that's related to eating moderately and not overeating and not getting obese and, you know, things like that, right? And it turns out exercise will, you know, do a lot of things that are beneficial, including inducing production of mitochondria and replacement of mitochondria. And then
that's pretty cool.
Aging is caused by damage to our DNA, damage to our protein, things that have to be repaired in the cell. And it turns out that when we sleep, we do a lot of this repair, you know. So the whole, all those old ideas, you know, eat well, eat healthily and moderately, get good sleep and get enough exercise. You know, what the reader will know is why these things are true. What is the underlying biology that makes this sort of age-old advice actually true? And so, you know, I would say those three things currently work better than any pill you can buy.
But is there a pill?
There is no pill.
I mean, give me something.
But people will offer you supplements and this.
There's no supplement. You're not going to tell me, like, take creatine, take vitamin D, like nothing. I don't get nothing.
If you ate a healthy diet, you would have the vitamins you need, the nutrients you need, and so on. If you're going to be on the road and constantly eating badly, that's when you might need these supplements just to make sure as an insurance policy. But I would not, that's not what I would do. I would eat healthily. I would eat salad. I would eat, you know, real food, you know, instead of, you know, packaged food and so on. So, you know, I think.
Well, you heard it here. There's no shortcut. Well, Venky, I love this. And like I said, I appreciate the conversation. I think all the things we covered are fascinating.
That is, we are at a crossroads. We don't know where this biology is going to take us. And one thing I do talk about in the book is, what are the consequences if we all started living longer? Let's say all of us started living 120 years. Well, let's say we break that barrier and we all started living 150, 200 years. What would it do to society? And I, you know, have some deep reservations about that. And so that's something I mentioned. I just thought I'd...
No, it's a good one. And just for those listening, if that interests you, we interviewed one of our first interviews, Venky, like 10 plus years ago, is this guy, Aubrey de Grey. He wants to live forever, essentially. He works for whatever. And I remember saying, like, well, how terrible would that be for the planet? And I remember he gave me an answer that caused me to think. He said, look, it might be, it might not be. But if your loved one was dying and we had the ability to help them live forever, would you give them that pill? I'm not saying it's right. It's something to think about, but it is an interesting thought exercise.
I would say he has a strong point in that, you know, I don't want to be a hypocrite. For example, I take statins. I take blood pressure medicine. Those are all things that are going to prevent me from getting a stroke or a heart attack and thereby prolong my life, okay? And so in a way, you could argue I'm already taking pills that extend my life, okay? And
there
so,
you go.
You know, it's very hard. If there was a pill that would make you live longer and healthier, you know, you can't tell people not to take it. And so we have to be ready for if that happens. I don't think it's around the corner, but there'll be other things that will help you, you know, that might help you be healthier, longer, etc. We have to be ready for changes in society that will happen as we get older, as more of us reach, longer lives. I mean, you know, when my parents were born, you know, reaching 60 or 65, you know, when Social Security was started, half the people didn't even make it past 65, okay? And so, you know, it was not a big deal. It wasn't like a big tax on the system. Now, you know, people live 20 years beyond retirement age, okay? And now living to 90 is not even that unusual, okay? Many of my, you know, colleagues and friends are living to be in their 90s. My dad is 98. And so...
Wow. See, you got good genes.
So, you know, so I think we do have to think about what will happen to society and how can we make that kind of society fair? You know, so it's not just restricted to some part of the population. You're not discriminating against young people. you know, as a result, intergenerational fairness. There are lots of issues there to think about. And I do talk about quite a bit of that.
You do. The book, Why We Die, The New Science of Aging and the Quest for Immortality. Venky, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Nice talking to you.
A special thank you to this week's guest, Venky Ramakrishnan. The episode was hosted, as always, by Chris Stemp and produced by yours truly, John Rojas. Venky's book, Why We Die, The New Science of Aging and the Quest for Immortality, is available wherever books are sold. Now let's jump into the quick housekeeping items. If you'd ever like to reach out to the show, you can email us at smartpeoplepodcast@gmail.com or message us on Twitter at smartpeoplepod. And to stay up to date with all things Smart People Podcast, head over to the website smartpeoplepodcast.com and sign up for the newsletter. All right, that's it for us this week. Make sure you stay tuned because we've got a lot of great interviews coming up. And we'll see you all next episode.